first, this is a fisherman's hat. I got that off of a Greek ship. His name's Stella Solaris. And this is the kind of hat they wear for the fishermen to go out and catch fish for the people. So I'll put this over here. I have traveled around quite a bit. I told you people the coin I'm wearing here is a French Polynesian franc. That's from the island of Tahiti. They have to have all the islands together as the social islands. But Tahiti is the main island and Papeete is the capital. And they must have 25 or 30 islands that all belong to a group out in the Pacific Ocean. And Papeete is the main city, I think about 35,000. And if you want to go to high school, you can't do it on the island. You have to go to Papeete. It's only high school in all the islands. But some of the natives don't like to go there because they say there's too many people, too crowded. They don't like it there. They don't wear shoes very often there. Just few people wear shoes. So they're pretty primitive there yet. You've been studying history. I want to talk a little bit about how the people got here. Now, most of them were along the east coast here, and they'd come down this area right through here, the Cumberland Gap, and go into Kentucky. Kentucky was one of the first states settled. But another group finally found out a way to come down through the mountains here, and they'd hit the Allegheny River up here. But right here's Pittsburgh, that's where the Ohio starts. And then they'd go down the Ohio River and settle wherever they thought was a good spot, mostly for farming. But this land didn't all belong to the United States then. So they could only go so far. Now right in our area was from the western part of our county, there's a line which goes to the mouth of the Kentucky River on up to an area about South Bend. That was Greenville Treaty Line, and anything west of that was the Indians. The Indians could stay over there. The white people had to stay back up here. And they came down the Ohio River, and a lot of them went up the Miami River, up Brookville and that area, and then a lot of them stayed right here in Dearborn County, which is as far as they could go without getting over in the Indian territory. So the river got to be one of the main highways of travel. Now, I wonder why they'd want to travel on the river. They'd have to build this raft. Anybody think of any reason why you'd want to travel on the river? Okay. Is what? Well, they could stay on one side of the river, but they did have rivers going out, and there was a lot of trees. And how did they travel? Do you have travel walking or horses?
They had the there's no roads and the horses.
That's right, they didn't have cars. When I was a little boy, they didn't even have cars. We could play out in the street. Horse would be coming, we could make a home run and run around the bases before he ever got there. Horse travels about 3 miles an hour. So if you was going to here from here to Lawrenceburg, it'd take you an hour or a little over to go from here to Lawrenceburg. I can remember when there was a gravel road up there. I got in with a man one day, a neighbor, and had a new car. He's very proud of new Essex. Never heard of an Essex. Well, anyway, he wanted to show me how good it was, and his wife was alone, and he got that up to 45 miles an hour, and she was a screaming, and he had to shut it down. He was going too fast. But let's get back to the river. It was trees, you know, like it is around the river bank. In the spring, the water would come up. The creeks would come up. How would you get across the creeks?
It would rain.
And do what?
It would rain.
No, I say, how'd they get across the creeks? The pioneer. See, they had to forge the creeks. They had to wade them, or the horses had to wade them. So a lot of early roads was back from the river, maybe 8 or 10 miles. But the river gave them a lot of advantages. They could build a raft, and the current would take them down the river. They could catch fish in the river and eat them. So in those days, the water was pure enough. We didn't have any factories out here. All we had was trees. You just drink the water out of the river. So you had water, you had food.
I wish you could still like that.
You had safety because you could see the ways between the boats and the shore. So if there was Indians there, at least you had a start on them, and you were that far away from them. So this is one of the big reasons they came down the river. And have you got a piece of chalk, John?
Any of you know what the early rafts look like? The ones that carried very much were something like this. They'd have a front, come back like this. They'd usually angle that out. Then about this area, they'd have a shelter. They'd build a shelter there. A door in the front, a door in the back. And to guide it, they'd have to put a thing back here with a paddle in the water. And there'd be a man up here to guide the boat. See, he could guide it.
Where he wanted to go?
Well, he would go with the current.
And
the water. If they wanted the faster in the spring, when there's a lot of water and a lot of rain, the river would be running faster. So if they went that time, they could go faster and get there quicker. But in the summertime, in August, when there was no rain, even the big river that you see out there now got ripples in it. And a boat like this couldn't run. That's the reason they built dams. In 1926, they built dams with a 9-foot channel. That means in the center of the river is about 9 foot deep. Before that, in the summertime, couldn't run. When I was a young boy, I went down to Rising Sun one time. They told me you could wade across the river there. Wouldn't be over your head. You just walk across the river.
Wow.
And you look out there now, it looks impossible, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Now, this is one of the things that happened. Have you heard of Lothar's defeat with the Indians? Well, that was in August when the water was low, and that was one of the problems they had. They had trouble getting away from the Indians because the water was so low that they couldn't hardly run on it. And at times they'd hit ripples and things and have to push their boats and things to get them over. And then down about Floyville, they call it a falls, but it was like a big ripple with maybe a small fall. And when they got that far, they'd have to portage around. They couldn't ride over that. So that's how the town of Louisville got started, because that's where they lived. Louisville on the Kentucky side, Jeffersonville on the Indiana side. And they eventually got stores and different things there because that's where the people had to get off the river. Okay. I got a few notes here. I better get that out to remind me of what I want to talk about. This is a book I've been studying. Image of the Ohio Valley tells about the people coming into this area and how they got here and so forth. But here I got travel by wagons and carriages. Usually they, in the early days, they walked. They could do better that way. There's so many trees that they couldn't use a, they'd use a wagon. Well, in the beginning, they followed buffalo trails, like from Louisville over to
Terre Haute, over in that area, there'd be buffalo trails, like a lot of cows would make, you know, they make paths. Well, they would follow those. Well, those would be very narrow, so if they wanted to take a covered wagon or something like that, then they'd have to cut down some trees. And maybe they'd have trouble taking their wagon because the stump was too high. Then they'd have to lift the wagon up and get it over the stump of the tree. So if you made 10 miles a day with a horse and wagon, in those days, you was doing pretty good. Let's see what we got on hoax. Okay. In the early times, the early canoes many times was hollow logs. They'd take a log, burn the center out of it or chop it out, and this would be their boat. Just a log with the center out of it. Then they had skiffs. They got so they'd make boards out of boats and make, you know what a skiff is, or row boats. You've seen them in the river, rowing boats, two oars. And those that were flat on front, we always called John boats. But the ones that were pointed, they called them skiffs. And this was a matter of having these two oars and rowing. Then there came the flat boats. It was made something like this, only larger. They might be 40 feet long. And this would be the whole family. They'd sleep in here. They'd have their cattle or their cow or their pig in there. They'd maybe have a little hay up in this area. And there's also a place on the side sometimes. A man would be here, and he would help. He would help by rowing out here. He'd row out there on the side and help get the boat going. Then, in time, they invented the steamboat. And the first steamboat, one of the first ones you made in Marietta, Ohio. You got a picture of Marietta here, right here. See, there's an early picture of Marietta. And Colton invented the steam engine, so they tried putting it on the boat. Steam engine would run the paddle wheel on the boat. See the paddle wheel on the back. The steam engine would run. First, it'd have to have a boiler with water in it. They'd throw logs in there and get a good fire going, and then they'd have steam, like a steam kettle, you know. And that steam would go into this engine, which would go back and forth. And that would turn this paddle wheel on the back end. So this first boat, they got coming down the river, and you know where North Bend is, right up the way. So they come down past there. And they didn't know what to think. They hear all this noise, and somebody decided it was a floating sawmill. And it was making so much noise, and scared them all. They didn't hear noises like that before. But they got going, and eventually they got to making boats like these. Some of these were made in the 1895s and so forth. Then when they go down, if they go down as far as New Orleans, they had no way of getting back. They could sell their rafts, the wood in it, and anything they had in it, and come back, but they had to walk or ride a horse back. But then they boats to go up the river till they invented the steamboat. And then they begin having better boats like this, and they could get off in New Orleans and sell their product, get on a boat and come back up. And those early days, this was the way they sent all their products to market. Here's a good example. You can see on this first deck here was the boiler and the engine that run the boat, and they carried wood. In the early days, they fired with wood. Throw wood in the boiler, and it would run the boat. Well, and they'd pick up freight along the river. They'd stop, and years back we had several chair factories in Aurora, and they used cotton for padding in the Davenports and things, they had cotton in them. Well, they would come and have big bales of hay, or big bales of cotton rather. And the colored fellows that worked down below, they'd carry them on shore. And so they didn't want all the products to get wet and all. That's when they invented the wharf boat like this. This was a boat that just sat along the edge of the bank, and the boats would pull up to them and stop, and everything that went to this particular town, which is Marietta, they would load on this wharf boat. So it'd be dry for storage. And then the people from the town, whoever had some of these things here, for instance, cotton, the chair factory would bring their trucks down. Well, they'd bring their horse and wagon. We'd get a truck, horse and wagon down, and throw the cotton on it and take it to the factory. So that's the way the freight went in the early days. They picked up almost anything, corn. I remember one time we was down the river and stopped at Warsaw, and there was five pigs that had in the pen to load on the boat. Well, the black fellas in loading them, somehow the pigs got away from them. So here they were chasing the pigs around through the willows down there, and you never heard that screaming and hollering from them pigs and those fellas trying to catch them. They finally got them and got them on board, and then put them in the pen on board and take them wherever they wanted to take them, maybe Cincinnati to a slaughterhouse to be made into meat. To give you an idea of traveling then on the river, you could go from Pittsburgh
up here. Let's see, you could go all 10 days, you could go from Pittsburgh down to Louisville. See, that's quite a distance. That's when the water was high, you'd go faster. And some of the products, of course, would be loaded on here and go clear down here to New Orleans. And that was a big port, because ocean liners would come in there and they'd ship things out. But
things that would then travel across the ocean.
Right. Uh-huh. And incidentally, the terminal down here at Georgia seems sometimes loads grain in those barges, and they get take down the river and they end up over in Europe or over in, and they even end up over in Japan, places like that. But they're always on the water. They take them all that way by water.
Why didn't they travel more by water rather than
putting
them on trucks?
Well, in the first place, to go across the ocean, they'd have to be put on a boat. In this way, they don't have to be transferred. In the second place, water travel is cheaper than even rail. And they can put them on boats, and of course, government helps subsidize it, but it's much cheaper. Anything, any heavy material, like you see coal hauled over the river. You see, coal is one of the main things. You see a lot of oil. And incidentally, one of those barges full is about as much as maybe 20, 30 freight cars. They all require a ton of stuff. And one of those, when they're empty, you want to know where that barge going down the river is full or empty. Well, you look how high it is out of the water. It'll be almost as high as the ceiling when it's empty. And when they load it down, see, it goes down so it's only about as high as this desk. It goes down the water from the weight. Does any of you have any questions now before we get on too far?
Okay. If you can show Mr. Watt, I believe there are. This is a picture of their drawing. And he was wanting to delineate.
Those are Irwin boats. You see them fancy smokestacks?
Did you say that the water went down as low as the basket?
I said the boat, the barge. When they load it, when you put something on something, the water goes down to keep it cool. When they empty the barge out, then the barge comes up out of water. They take all the weight out of the barge. They take all the tarn out of the barge. And it's empty. It goes up, it floats up high.
The paddle wheels on the side, is that, is there a different name, or is it still
referred to as a side boat? Just side paddle, and it's much more complicated because the wheels are on both sides. It is a little easier to steer the way and run one and then turn a lot harder. But the back one is much simpler because the engines can just go back and forth and they just got this one paddle wheel, where the other's got two, one on each side.
Are there two separate engines then, the pallet or?
Probably, pallet, yeah. Side? Get more power and get different. Now to get real modern, I was on a ship that had like tunnels through the center with propellers in them, and it could go up alongside of a deck, side of a platform, and just hook them in and go in sideways. But they only use those to land out in the ocean. And nowadays, where they, I'll tell you a little bit about these. Here's a pilot house. I don't know if you see that wheel or not. They had a wheel. I just figure around. I come clear up to their neck. And they could guide the boat with that. They had a back here would be a steering rod or a sort of a fin. And they, as they turned that, they would turn the boat. Well, they had to know the river in these early days. They had to know it like they say when they tests every so often. They had to know it like you can go around your room in the dark. You can walk around your house in the dark.
Yeah.
You know where everything is. Well, these pilots had to know where all the sandbars were. They got stuck on them, it'd be hard to get off. You might be there for a week trying to get off.
Can you explain what a sandbar is?
Oh, a sandbar? You know what a sandbar is? Well, usually a sandbar is across from a creek, like down in Aurora where the Pogan Creek is. Before they raised the water so much, there was a sandbar from here clear out that hole, all sand, where the creek would come out and wash sand over there. And that's where we went swimming over there.
So it's actually where the creek water would flow and would carry with it sand and rocks and it would empty into the river. So it's kind of like a, what do you say, a high spot or a shallow spot?
Yeah, it would deposit sand till the sand got over the shore, and there'd be a shallow place for the boats at that. And then you might have having all that weight get up on there. Sometimes they'd have to wait till other boats come along and help pull them off.
So like you said, they knew the water.
Just like they do the room in the dark. And for instance, down around the Roar, there's a bend something like this, and then it goes over this way. Well, in the early days, and they still have, maybe right here, down around that hump in Texas, right here they'd have a, in the early days, it'd just be a lamp. They'd hang up there. And here would be the boat coming. And over here would be another lamp. They'd head for that. They'd get about this position and there'd be another lamp hanging down here. So they'd get that position and they'd start at this lamp. And from this spot they could see that. And so they'd head at that, like that. And that's the way they'd go down the river at night.
Do they still have a system similar to that on the river?
They still have lights on the river, but most boats have radar. They can just look, have the radar going, and you look down and see the contours of the river. And the other thing, when boats passed each other, they had to know which side they were passing on. They'd run into each other. So they give one tube to pass on the port side.
The sport load would be coming down here like this, and this fellow would be coming up, and he wouldn't know where to go. So he'd blow one whistle, and he'd know to pass him on this side. And two blasts, well, they passed it on the other side. So they'd have to listen for whistles, or they wouldn't know what was going to happen, and probably have a boat wreck.
Port is what side, left or right?
Right.
Right side.
And nowadays, they have ship-to-ship telephones. They just ring the guy and talk to him on the phone and say, I'm going to do this or that. How you doing today and all that? I'm going to pass you on the right side. That's the way they do. But this was in the early days before they had any radios or telephones. And originally, it was just lamps. Now it's automatic lights that come on. With an electric guy whenever it starts getting dark, right? Yeah. So what?
Well, that's something else. You know, they do have kind of affected by sound, but this is by light.
Yeah. This is just according to when it gets dark, the lights come on by automatically. So that you see. So what?
Oh, did he work for a thermal?
Well, maybe he probably can tell you some things about folks here. But in back days, this is what happened. The people would ride on the second deck. Freight was down here with their boilers and their engines turning the paddle wheel. Boiler must have been this area. See the smoke coming out of it? That's from the boiler. They're throwing.
Why are the smokestacks so tall?
Huh?
Why are the smokestacks so tall?
These were automatic drafts, and the higher the smokestack is, the more draft, the more air would go through, and that would tend for the fire to burn more. The more air passes, the lighter. Now you have a fire, and the wind blows, that fire picks up and goes a lot hotter. Well, that's the way it was in fire. They could regulate the draft, and that would regulate the steam. Usually, they carry 100 pounds steam pressure. That means that there's 100 pounds to a square inch. There's a square inch. That's 100 pounds. So, if you had a in your steam engine would be something like this with a rod going out, and this would be the piston around, and the steam, they have a little place on top here that had a valve, and it'd come down here and run down here. Well, it really go out to the ends, out to there, out to there. Now there's steam. This valve would go back and forth. It had a little hole there in the middle. When it'd go that way, well, the steam would go in this end and push the piston this way. And then this would move back, move up. The steam would come down this way and push it back. So that steam was pushing this way and that way, this way and that way. And then this would go out and ride on a rod here, like this, so it'd be even. It'd go back and forth on air, and then this would go out to the paddle wheel and back. See, as this pushed, well, the wheel would go around. Wheel would go around, and that, as that went back and forth, the wheel would go around, and that would run your boat. That'd give it the power. Let's see, what else do we want to talk about? Sound. When we were kids, we didn't have any swimming pools. Somebody, high school, now they think that's funny. We didn't have any swimming pools. Just swam in the creek, swam in the river. And of course, they were pure in those days. But when I was about junior high, about 12, 14 years old, I'd swim in the creeks when it was muddy, and it was full of mud. When I got home for supper, I didn't know whether I'd eat or not.
And that's the only place we had to swim. There wasn't any swimming pools around. So if you wanted to swim, swim on the river. And we was talking about the sandbar across the river. In the summertime, all the people that wanted to swim would go over in the sandbar, and they'd make fires, bonfires, and they'd have wieners and marshmallows put on there. Over on the Kentucky side, they grew watermelons. Sometimes you buy a watermelon over there and put that in the river. That'd keep it cooler. And the sun was shining, just keep it in the water, and it'd be cooler. So when you cut it, you'd have a cooler watermelon to eat. The only trouble was, if you were buried in the cool sand with water around, and they was light, and when you come back to get them, they'd be popped up, and the sun had been on them, and they'd be hot. And so that's the way we swam in the old days. We'd like a sandbar over there, and you'd go across. We had a ferry boat then. You'd go across on the ferry and go over there, and you'd swim, and have your hot dogs and toast your marshmallows and have a great evening. But at night you can look across there and see maybe 8 or 10 fires are burning. We're on a sandbar. There's another thing I was going to tell about on its wharf boats. I just used to, the fellow named Gus Gerlach run the wharf boat Aurora, and even though
now imagine 100 pounds. How many of you weigh 100 pounds? Any of you weigh 100? Leslie, what do you weigh?
Mm-hmm.
You don't know. I would guess you would really weigh about 100 pounds. Now imagine all of your weight put on 1 inch, just about the size of a postage stamp. That's how much pressure you're pushing on it. 100 pounds per inch. So that's a lot of pressure pushing those valves open and closed. Okay, you finished.
Just a sort of a idea that I've drawn there approximately 6 inches in diameter. Yeah, they study about there is. Probably haven't studied that. IR square. So if the piston's about that size, 100 pounds a square inch, you'd have about 3,000 pounds pushing against that piston. Now that'd be as much weight as there is in a car. That weight pushing against that is as much weight as if the car was standing. Give you an idea.
That's what gave the steam engine
steam
boat.
Yeah.
Now, tell about the racing.
I was going to say in the early days, the teacher said they kind of was proud of their boats, and they all thought they had the fastest boat. So if they was going the same direction, got close to each other, sometimes they'd race, wanted to see who could go the fastest. And these black men was down there, they was throwing in wood, getting up more steam, getting the old boiler going, and the captain would try to guide his boat so when it comes to a bend, so it'd be the shortest distance across. And sometimes they'd get so excited and you know, throwing so much fire and everything, the boats would catch on fire, or the boilers would explode. And the boat would catch on fire, and down they'd go. And burn up, and
people in on it, they either had to grab some wood and swim to shore or do something to try to save themselves. I think they had very few lifeboats. You don't see any lifeboats on any of these. Nowadays, they have to have more safety. But just to get it local, there's a story that the boat named the Pat Rogers going down past the roar some way caught on fire. I don't know just how fast. But the boat was on fire, and the people was trying to get off. They'd throw their trunks and things off, and the old story that some of the old fishermen told that they would go out there with their rowboats, and instead of catching the people, they'd pick up a trunk. They'd pick up the valuables that they'd throw off, and some of the people would drown. And so some of the old rivermen used to tell me that down the river, down over Lothar Creek, down below that, Lothar Club, in that area, they say, they tell us that you could go down there at night and you could see ghosts walking around. And then people have died, and they weren't picked up. So when we were young fellows, we decided we was going down and see the ghosts. And about time we got right across the river and rolling into there, here come a big storm. And we almost got run over by some of the boats trying to get out of the storm, and it was getting dark then. So we finally got across and pulled in the shore, and there's a big old tree there that fell in the river, and we tied up it and got on shore, and it began raining by that time. So we began cutting leaves, the limbs off the trees, and making a lean to out of leaves. And there all night long we stayed there, and here was this boat, poof, 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 as the waves were hitting this big log. And so we finally went to sleep, and the leaves was keeping us fairly dry, and we woke up later on, the moon was out. But we never did find the ghosts, and none of the ghosts ever showed up that night. So we don't hardly believe the story they told us. That's kind of a Huckleberry Finn, but that's actually, and the other thing, of course, was Lothar's massacre down there, where 42 men were killed by the Indians. And there's a rock on the other side of the river, cliff, and they call one Kirby's Rock. They claim that a man named Kirby swam across and got away from Indians and hit them rocks, and he was the only man who got saved. Now, whether that's true or not, I don't know. But one day when we was down there, we got looking around, and we did find a crack in the cliff, see? And we could go in there maybe 4 or 5 feet, squeeze in that crack, and I began thinking maybe that rocks would move a little bit, so I got out of there. I didn't want to be in there when them rocks got any closer together, because there wasn't any room to get out. I'll just tell you a little more about local stories. Please, I've heard all kinds of stories about what big animals was in the river. I don't believe that. I've talked to fishermen that they'd catch fish for a living and sell them around town with nets. And the biggest fish I've ever heard of was one that weighed 60 pounds, big catfish. Like down at the dam when the ice gorge was got stuck down there and things, divers went down and they tell all kind of unbelievable stories, but I don't believe there's anything in that fish, and some fish are bigger than others. Eels. Don't know what an eel is?
Yeah.
Looks like a snake, but its head's like a fish. Is it your brother caught one on a line? What happens if you catch them on a line? They're just like a fish. Or like a snake. Your line goes around like this, keeps going around like that, and you wonder what you got on your line. And most people won't eat them because it's a kind of a coarse meat that's not very good. I think I better stop talking for a while and see if there's any questions. And,
Aaron?
What
was something up there on the board?
Is that what?
The
Delta Queen.
Yeah,
a picture
of the Delta Queen.
Yes, it's a... This is fine.
Where is it? Oh, here it is. Here's a. There's one up there, too, I believe. The Delta Queen is an exception. It's one of the latest boats. It was the latest one with the exception of the Mississippi Queen, which stays down at New Orleans all the time. But they do have rooms on this second floor. There's staterooms. And a stateroom on the ocean liners would be about this big, this square right in here, through to the wall. They have two beds, one bed on each side, and over here is the restroom or the bathroom. And it's just in a corner, about like this. Being one corner. And you have your shower, your commode, your lavatory, all in about 3 feet of room like that. So, you don't hardly have room to turn around. That's one of them places where they say you have to go outside to change your mind. Yeah. So narrow in there that the wife complained she couldn't get in the shower without standing on the outside. But this Delta Queen was actually transported some troops around during World War II, and there are staterooms there. You see, they're a much bigger boat than these were. And more modern. I will tell you thing about the ocean liners. The ocean liners, I got in trouble calling the pilot house, and the captain said, that's not a pilot house, that's a bridge. But instead of having this big wheel that they guide with, they go, everything's electronics. They hook their beam onto a satellite up there, and that's what guides the boat, keeps it on that line with that satellite. And then they have a gauge there that if you get it a little off to east or west, it shows you on a gauge, and then you get there, you got a little wheel about the side of a steering wheel, and he hits it back so it's going right on a straight line with the satellite. So there's about all you see in those. There's a lot of buttons, electronic meters, and all that, and the small steering wheel. And that's the way the ocean boats are. Where they used to travel, there's the stars. Watch the stars, and then they know where to go. Nowadays, they go to the satellites, which are shot up in the ground around the world.
Yeah, I think we have time for about two more questions.
Okay.
Terry? Do you have a tugboat?
Do I have a what, a tugboat? The kinds of that pushes barges like that. Nowadays they don't have boilers. They run them by oil, so all they got an engine lights in your car, and that runs around and pushes the wheels, which is down in the water. The Mississippi Queen is the biggest boat, and it stays down pretty well at the. It's the latest boat built. It stays down at New Orleans, but it was so large when they first built it, they had trouble getting it upstream. It was so big, they had trouble pushing it. So
it had it at 7 stories tall.
Yeah, it could do.
Everyone will get a chance to go walk by each of the paintings. And these are photographs of paintings.
Right.
They're
all real boats. A man painted them, and then these are taken off of his painting.
Okay, another question?
Yeah.
That might have been the Delta Queen.
Let's take a review for Sam. Now, who knows why they start traveling down the river now? Why did they start traveling down the river instead of going on the shore?
Okay, they didn't have cars. So boats would be what in walking? Boats would be faster, traveling
was faster. They had horses. What's unbelievable, I was amazed at the Indians, the way they get around.
But a man in the old days is a good walker. He could go, he walked maybe 16, 18 hours, but all day long and all night, most of the night, only 24 hours a day. But he could walk anywhere from 35 to 40 miles if he's a good walker. And he got a horse, couldn't do much better, because after a while a horse got tired, he had to stop and water the horse. Maybe do a few more miles faster. Much to the travel in the early days by walking. Like here, when I was in high school, it's a building they tore down right over here. Well, I lived over in town, we got an hour for dinner. I'd walk over town and walk back for dinner. One day a week we had glee club. I just could be back in a half hour. So if I'd run home and eat real fast and run back, I'd get back in a half hour and then try to sing. I'd be out of breath and try to sing. And any other questions?
My grandma
was on the other side of Lockery. Oh, on the other side of Lockery? That's where the Battle of Lockery is supposed to be. Down on the other side of the creek.
Any other questions? All I got?
My daddy, she's supposed to be taken.
What's she saying?
Her granny sees big boats, barges filled with coal.
Oh, yeah. The prettiest sight I ever saw on the river, I think, was a barge load of sulfur, that yellow sulfur, a big barge load up, and the sun shone on, and it just looked like the sun coming up off the barge.
So the river's been very important to us for years and years.
Yes, that's
true. Probably some of our families might have even settled in this area.
My grandfather was a flatboater. Go down. Some of them, we talked about New Orleans, but some of them would just go maybe as far as Lauderdale, take products, even back. They didn't all go that far.
So the river's always been very important to our town, and maybe
that's the main reason.
We see the barge is still on the river, and hopefully in the next week we'll get to see some more of these big steamboats or boats like these pass on their way to the Cross Facts Festival.
This boat, right? Where is it? Here. That was down the river. That just went up the river two or three weeks ago. Had it down at Warsaw repainting it, and they took it back up to Marietta.
What's the name of that boat?
This is a Snyder. W.P. Snyder. See that? That was used to push barges and things. It sets low in the water. The other thing... kids used to do for amusement, if you had a rowboat, you'd get out there real fast enough and get behind that boat, and them old waves would be going up and down.
You go.
Like you're on a surfboard.
Like this. Yeah, like you're going
on
a rowing
boat. And the speedboat went by and got on the
boat. That's why we
tell Mr. Washington. Well, I'm glad. Our historical society has two real purposes. One is to teach you more about history. And I had two purposes for getting in as president for 4 years. And the one thing I wanted to do was get out and talk to classes and tell them about it. Because if you don't get it out, and people don't learn from it, it won't do no good. The other thing we're doing right now is trying to gather up history from 1915, which is the last time the one was written, and up to the present time, so we can write another history so that people 50 years from now can read how the children come to school and how what you did, and they can find out what you are doing now. When they're a little, you can't tell what'll happen with them.
Right. So we started having a couple of roads walk up and walk by.
Yeah, sure. They can
pictures.